This is the Financial Tech Podcast, show number 2 for February 10th, 2011. I am your host, Jim Collison, and today I am joined again by my co-host, Andrew Hunt. Andrew, how are you doing today?
Very well, sir. How are you?
Good. It's good to have you back for show number 2. So we made it past show number 1. That's always a great accomplishment when you're doing podcasting to get beyond show number 1. Some really good feedback from the show, by the way. I've been sharing a little bit with you, but for a number 1 podcast, good stuff. So congratulations on getting the first podcast out.
Yes, good to be back.
Did you you posted this on your blog as well? And Andrew, your blog, tell me where you're posting these days again.
Yeah, so I put this up on gallupfcu.blogspot.com.
And that's where you do all your financial blogging as well, right?
Right. I write a weekly blog and put it up out there. And, we do some announcements and things like that.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And Twitter account?
Twitter is ADHunt586.
Excellent. So good to have you back this week. Of course, you can follow the show. Our web address is theaverageguy.tv. You can email the show, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. And you can follow me on Twitter, Jay Collison. Well, we've got a great topic for you today. We're going to try and really hold these podcasts to 30 minutes. So Andrew and I are going to blaze through this material, but give it great attention. And so today, Andrew, we wanted to talk a little bit about credit scores for the average guy, right? I mean, there's kind of this credit score myth that's out there that maybe you have to have a 800 credit score to get accepted for anything. We know in 2009 that credit scores got a lot more, after 2009, credit scores got a lot more attention, maybe from the owners. Maybe that's a myth as well. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. And so we want to talk about credit scores today. And I guess the first question I want to ask you is, how can the average guy get a decent credit score? And maybe I should ask you, what is a decent credit score? I mean, how does this thing work? How does that system work?
Well, those are both really great questions. And we want to try and answer as many of these questions as we can in 30 minutes, but I'll do my best. Credit scores are put together by a company called Fair Isaac and Company. And credit scores range anywhere from 300 being really, really low, all the way up to 850. In reality, though, most of the times you won't even get a score if your score is below 450.
Okay, so my kids, I have a 21-year-old, and we applied for some credit for him about a year ago, and we got nothing back. Does that mean, so did he get does he have a zero? If he has no credit, does that mean it's a zero? So it's not really a credit score; it's more of a debt score, right? I mean,
right, absolutely. So it's so most likely what happened is the report came back NA, and in those cases, the not applicable report just basically means that you don't have any credit out there, and i.e., you don't have debt. Here's a common misconception that I love to address right away, is because a lot of people say, "Well, I have utility bills in my name, or I have a cell phone in my name. Shouldn't that be reporting my credit score?" Or credit report, more or less. And the answer is no. The only time a utility or a cell phone or something that's not actual extension of credit, the only time that would be on your credit report is if you stopped paying it and it went to collections. So there's a little...
So no good, all bad.
Myth busted right there.
Yeah, so they don't report the good stuff, just the bad stuff, right?
Yeah, if it's not an actual extension of credit, they only report the bad stuff.
So if I want a good credit score, let's stress that first. If I want a good credit score, what are the... I mean, obviously, right, I need to make payments on something, right? I mean, is it that simple?
Right, yeah. I mean, since it's a debt score, having a really great credit score, and this is one thing I kind of want to address, is having a really great credit score and being really in great financial situation are not the same. Because you can get a really high credit score and just have tons of debt, probably to the point where you're having a hard time making those on-time payments, but you're getting a made type deal. And that could translate to a super high credit score. And unfortunately, we see a lot of that sometimes.
So, if for the overachievers, let's say,
yeah, right,
who want that, and what's the top credit score you can get?
850 is the hypothetical top, but the highest I've ever seen is somewhere between 835 and 840.
Okay, you probably shouldn't have said that, because now all the overachievers in the audience are going to be pulling their credit reports and trying to get to that. But that, like you said, that doesn't necessarily mean then that I'm in a great financial health.
Exactly. I mean, just think about it. If you could go out, well, here's some of the things that go into making up a good credit report, right? Now, we don't know exactly what goes into it because Fair Isaac obviously doesn't want everybody to know how to calculate credit scores. So it's a proprietary model. It's some sort of mathematical equation out there, but it's based on a few things that we do know for sure. It's based on different types of accounts. So mortgages versus, you know, installment loans like a car loan versus credit cards versus charge cards. So different types of accounts. Your payment history on those accounts, obviously having on-time payments is important. Having low delinquency or low late payments. And then balance to available credit. So if you've got all your cards maxed out, you know, that's obviously going to be more negative than if you carry very low balances on revolving and if you've paid down some installment loans. So those are the things that go into creating the score. So when you think about it, the easiest way to get a really high credit score is to have a little bit of all of those, or in some cases, a lot of all of those. But in reality, the best way to be financially fit and to have a high credit score is simply have credit for a long time and make on-time payments, systematically paying down balances. To be honest, Jim, the high credit score that I mentioned to you was somebody who was over 65, had a paid off mortgage, and had never had a late payment in their entire life. And so that's how they got really high credit.
There's also a myth out there that says after a certain number of years, say I have some delinquencies, something hurting my credit score, that those things fall off the reports. Mm. True or false? Does that hang with you forever? Does it drop off?
Yes and no. After 7 years, negative reporting, so late payments or collections, things like that, do fall off. But the rules around how the companies can get those reinstated on your report are sometimes they're a little mystical because let's say you have a good conscience and, you know, maybe you were late on something or something went to collections 4 years ago and you say, hey, you know what? I want to make that right. I want to pay that back. Well, then all of a sudden you reignited that 7 year window when you reach out to them and want to make payments on it. So now what was 4 years in history is now present day history. And so it's going to stick on your report for another 7 years.
Okay. So there is a seven year window. Essentially. Mm-hmm. And if I wanted to, all right, so maybe I've had some debts in the past or I want to find out what's on my credit report, my credit history, so to speak. Let's talk a little bit about that because I know there's some ways to get a hold of your credit report, but I also know there's some dubious things going on with that, right? I mean,
oh yeah.
So first of all, what's the best way to get my credit report and the legal way or the right way to mm-hmm. do it? And then maybe what are some things I need to watch out for in gathering my credit report?
That's a fantastic question. So let's say you want to evaluate how's your credit standing. You don't necessarily need your FICO score for that. And actually, the federal government made it a law that all consumers are eligible to receive a free report from each of the reporting agencies per year. And there's three reporting agencies. It's TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian.
And those are all online, right? I mean, you can
absolutely.
They have, and you can Google that and get that. We'll include those links to those in the show notes.
Yes. And so the government says you're allowed to have one free report from each of those companies every year. It doesn't include your score, but if you can see what's on your report, you can kind of deduct where your score is going to fall, if it's going to be low, medium, or high. Anyway, and so the government-sponsored website where you can go to get these free reports is called annualcreditreport.com. I'm going to say that again because you'll notice it's not a site that advertises a lot on TV.
Right.
And has some nifty jingles.
Yes.
This is the government-sponsored one. This is the one you want to go to. It's annualcreditreport.com. And you can go out there and, you know, there's a lot of companies out there that do credit report monitoring and will, you know, you pay them $10 a year or whatever and they'll monitor your credit. Well, really, you can do it yourself. Because if you think about it, there's three reporting agencies out there. They pretty much all report the same thing. And you can go out there every 4 months and pick up a credit report. So essentially, you can monitor your own credit throughout the year and you know, stay on top of things.
So you're telling me I don't need to pay that fee to have somebody else watch it?
No, you really don't need
okay.
to.
Okay. Although they do provide a service, right? I mean, if you don't want to monkey around with having to remember to do that, say you do want to pay mm-hmm. to do that. Is it worth it isn't the right word, but is it a viable service? Would you recommend it to someone who, you know?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
You know, it's like anything. You know, I could probably finish my basement on my own, but and some things it's just worth it to pay somebody else.
So it's not dubious, right? I mean, it's not, there's not fraud, although there probably are some.
Oh, totally.
Okay. Yeah. And so what should folks watch out for if they're searching for their credit report? You know, if you go to Google and type in free credit report, you're going to get a list of things, and some are going to be legit and others aren't. What do they want to, I mean, first they would want to look for this annualcreditreport.com, right? That would,
right.
That's the sanctioned one.
Yep.
What do they want to watch for in other companies? What would be some questions the average guy would want to ask these companies before they just engage with them?
Right. Well, the trap that a lot of people get sucked into are these recurring fees. And so the first place that I would go to is, you know, gosh, how much is this going to cost? And are there going to be any recurring fees that are going to keep hitting my debit card? If I had a nickel for every time somebody wanted to dispute a charge from one of these supposedly free companies out there, I'd have several nickels. And yeah. So what I would want to go through and just go down kind of the fine print of the page and say, okay, before I start entering my social security number or my debit card number and PIN, what are the costs associated with this? In reality, I wouldn't pay more than $10 for a credit report, and that would include the FICO score. And so if there's anything in there that, you know, it's $39.99 or something like that, 20 times a year, keep a lookout for that. And at the end of the day, buyer beware for sure. You know, if it sounds too good to be true, if they're promising that they're going to, you know, expunge your credit report by you paying a certain amount of fees and things like that, hey, if you were late on a payment, it probably deserves to be on your credit report.
So if it's too good to be true, it probably is, right?
That
always holds true. So if I'm a middle-aged, I've got a family, I'm your average guy, right? And I'm trying to improve my credit score. What kind of things do I need to do? And since we're a tech podcast, what kind of technology can I deploy sort of in my favor? Or what kind of behaviors should I take that might help improve my credit score? If maybe I've had bad credit history in the past, or if I've got a good score and I just want to maintain it?
Oh, great question. By and large, in order to get a really good credit score, or even just an average credit score, that's going to qualify you for the normal interest rates out there on loans and such, is just having on-time payment history. And there are some, it is hard to be disciplined and to remember when all the different bills are due. And so the one thing from a technology standpoint that I would suggest would be using online bill pay. It seems like such a simple thing, and every financial institution on the face of the earth has online bill pay now, and most of them it's free if you have your checking account with them. You can set it and forget it pretty much. You just enter in when your bill due dates are, and then, you know, set the bill pay to automatically send out the payments, and boom, you've got on-time payments, built in right there. And that's probably the first and most important thing, to do. The second one is that idea of having, outstanding balance of credit as compared to available credit. Here's a rule of thumb for you. If you've got a credit card out there, you never want to use more than 33% of the available credit on it. So if you've got a $10,000 limit, well then don't ever use more than $3,300 worth of credit compared to the max. That way it's going to keep you in the most favorable range according to Fair Isaac. And that's a little free piece of advice.
Yeah, you know, I've never heard that.
Oh, cool.
You know, I've been in the financial business. I was 10 years ago for a while, but I'd never heard that kind of that one-third rule. So kind of keep it. And that's probably good practice or good habit anyways.
Absolutely.
Right? From a financial standpoint, you probably don't want to stretch yourself beyond. But you look at those, I think one of the changes that went on with credit card companies a couple years ago, or maybe just last year, they now have to show you on the statement, right, how long it would take at the minimum payment to pay off that credit card. And it's a long time. Right.
Yes, it is. Disgustingly so in some cases.
It's a long time if you're actually going to do that. So don't. It's a bad idea. It's just you're giving the credit card company a lot of the money that you don't have to. Automatic bill pay. Let me just tell you a quick story on that, right? So we're big believers in auto stuff. And actually, I'm one of those kind of guys that runs all my payments through the credit card first. So the auto pay to the credit card, which, by the way, they didn't used to let you do about 10 years ago, right?
That's right.
Kind of a new thing as well. So run it through the credit card, get the points, pay it off each month. You get the rebate, every 9 months or so, we get a $250 check, right? That goes right back into the account. It's kind of sweet. And you could do, I could do it through my checking account as well. Well, recently we had some fraud on our credit card, and we got that. We shut that card down, to eliminate the fraud. Well, I had about 10 or 15 payments tied to that thing.
No.
And you kind of forget how many things you start getting tied automatically.
Right.
And so now I think this is a success story because I was able to, in about 10 minutes, literally log in to, so I'm a Sprint customer. So I went to their website, logged in, changed my billing information, logged out, done.
Boom.
Right? Went to, we do some charitable giving. Went to that company's site. They actually had that availability to change that credit card information online, which I thought, well, that's really cool. So I changed that. I hope those sites are secure, by the way.
Right.
But one after the other, we must have had 10 or 12 payments. I was able to get 95% of them done online and changed in 10 or 15 minutes. It was pretty amazing.
That's sweet.
So a pretty cool technology story. Here I thought, oh, it's going to take me forever. All that stuff is tied to the, to that card
right.
number. And we were able to knock it out pretty fast.
Wow, that's a really cool story. And it seems like more and more stuff is now, if you just Google it, can I go change this online? Absolutely.
Yeah, we're kind of past that, I think, for most companies. We're kind of past that where the website does a few things but doesn't do others. Most of those sites now are sophisticated enough that you can handle when it's paid, mm-hmm. where it's paid out of. Several places I got the opportunity to pay with a check, so I could put the routing number and the account number in. I could pay via PayPal or I could pay via credit card. Of course, PayPal takes a chunk of that, and they like
right.
it that
yeah.
way as well. Some people think because PayPal's online that it's free. It's not so free.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's free if you're paying. It's not
right,
free
if you're taking.
Yep. they take a little chunk out of that. So I don't know how that compares to credit card companies, but anyhow, so you talk about auto payments. That was kind of a success story. I'm a big believer in set it and forget it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the concerns is what if happens if I need to change that? Well, I think today with technology, it's pretty easy to go in and get that changed. Let me go all the way back to the beginning. So if I'm trying to establish credit, then say I'm young and I don't have any credit. What's the best way? And not the easiest way.
Right.
And maybe not the first day you're in college and you get a pizza for filling out a credit card application, right? But what's the best way to establish your credit?
That's a great question. The credit card trap is kind of being more publicized. So people are starting to realize, hey, when my kid goes to college, I need to tell him the story about the free T-shirt and how it's not that great of a deal.
Yeah. That's
before
kind of a trick in the 90s, right?
Right. Yeah. Before you know it, you have $10,000 worth of credit card debt. We hear that story every day. And so now we've kind of realized that, hey, getting a credit card isn't the greatest thing to do. So how do you get credit? Well, you can do a couple of different things. There are still secured credit cards out there where you put $500 up and then you have a $500 limit on a credit card. So it's kind of secured by your own cash, and that way you're building on time payments. The other option is, let's say you need to go buy a car. Well, people say, well, I can't buy a car without credit. Well, you can if you go find someplace that does manual underwriting. Now, a lot of financial institutions right now have moved towards kind of the automatic system where the personal banker just types in some information on a computer and then presto, bam, approval or denial. All that is another algorithm where they're just taking in that information and developing approval or denial. Well, at smaller financial institutions like our credit union, for example, we literally go through each application by hand, and we don't penalize people for having no credit. Instead of saying no credit is bad credit, we just go ahead and say, okay, we'll do you at our B credit rating and we'll give you a shot. And we might not.
What's B mean?
That's another okay. great question.
Right.
So what is A credit versus A plus credit versus B credit? Well, we would define A credit as a credit score between 660 and 740. A plus credit being 740 and above, and B credit being 660 and lower to about 615. And then as you get below that, then we start getting into subprime area. And so we would just do this loan as if you were a B credit borrower, somebody who'd had maybe a couple of late payments, So it's not going to be pristine interest rates, but it's not going to be, 18%. It's going to be giving you a shot at least.
Right. So not the 20%, not the 5%.
Right.
It's going to
exactly.
be somewhere in between, right?
Exactly.
Depending upon what you're borrowing.
Exactly. So if you're doing an auto loan as compared to a personal loan, it's compared to maybe a, you know, a second mortgage.
So there's another kind of question or myth out there that talks about my credit score affects my interest rate.
Hmm.
So in light of that, then that is true. So I get a higher interest rate if my credit's, I mean, it kind of seems to be penalized, right?
Yeah.
Right. So then it's harder to pay off that loan because there's more interest. Is that really the way it works?
It's true. And that's something we called risk-based lending. In the 90s, most financial institutions stopped going on handshakes and started going towards what's your risk profile like? And you know what? Your risk profile can change. A lot of times we have people who come in with, you know, maybe they've been unemployed for a while and so their credit took a beating. And we go ahead and we do a loan for them. And then maybe 6 months or 12 months later, they want to try and refinance that loan at a little better interest rate because their credit improved. And we do that all the time.
So that's a doable type thing, right? I mean, just because you're in a loan doesn't mean you're in that loan forever. So say I take out a 5-year auto loan and I've had bad credit in the past and it's kind of a ridiculous, maybe let's just say 13%, you're struggling. After a year or two maybe of making those payments on time, I go back to the lender and I say I want to refinance this. I mean, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, you know that might be a very plausible scenario. In some cases, there are going to be refinance fees, but a place like our credit union, we don't have any refinance fees. The only income we make is interest cost. So
any other tips, especially from a technology standpoint, if I'm trying to monitor, work on, improve, deal with my credit score, what else could I do, do you think?
Oh, you know, that's you know, keep going on that same path of, you know, what can we do to improve the credit score? Well, I think probably the best thing to do is to also make sure that you're monitoring the activity on your report. So going out there and either paying for the service or doing the annual credit report once every 4 months and making sure that all the information on there is accurate. It's, believe it or not, mistakes do happen. And so sometimes agencies that you're working with, maybe it's your financial institution, they might mistakenly report some negative history. And if that's the case, when you go to apply for your first mortgage, you don't want to be bamboozled by some negative history that isn't yours. So make sure you're logging on, going out and using those web resources that we were talking about to actually check out what your score is doing.
Now, this happened to me when I was a lot younger, when first married, in the first 5 years, you know, trying to establish that credit. And I might be going to, let's just say, Furniture Mart to pick up some furniture. And I get there and I get all excited about this, you know, $2,500 sofa set. And I'm getting ready to, how are you going to pay for it? Let's put it on credit. And then the guy comes back and says, I'm sorry, the credit bureau says you have too many credit inquiries.
Right.
Does that still happen? Hasn't happened to me in a long time, but does that still kind of happen?
Yes and no. So they kind of addressed this issue. I think it's probably been about 5-10 years ago. They changed the rules where, let's say you're going around shopping for a car. This is the more, usually not furniture. If you're in Omaha, there's like 4 furniture stores here. So,
and they're huge.
Yeah, and they're all huge. So you'll probably find what you need at one of them. So when you're shopping for a car is the more likely scenario. You're probably going to a couple of different dealers. You know, you're working them, looking at this car, looking at that car, and you're probably seeing what financing is available at the dealer, at your credit union, at your small town bank, and at the big bank. And so it used to be that every time they would pull an application for you, it was ding, your credit. Well, now if you can pull your application within a 14-day period, an unlimited amount of times, and the credit reporting agencies are going to go, oh, they're shopping for credit. We're not going to ding their score here. Now, if you, let's say you start going out for credit card. Let's say you go open a credit card, you jump online. It's so easy to do these days. You jump online, apply for the Capital One card. And then a couple of days later, you apply for the Chase card. And a couple of days later, you go apply for the American Express. Well, the credit reporting agencies are pretty smart, and so they're going to be able to look at that, and they're going to say, hey, this guy's applying for a bunch of unsecured credit as opposed to installment loans. That's probably not a good thing. They're probably going to go rack up a bunch of unsecured credit. We're going to ding his score now. So that is intelligent enough to
recognize
that.
So I still do get dinged if I'm applying.
Right.
That lowers my credit score. Is that right?
Right. It depends on what you're applying for. So mortgages and installment loans, it's smart enough to know that you're shopping. Unsecured credit, it's smart enough to know that you're probably just going to go rack up a bunch of debt.
So it is a good So sorry, that was funny. So it is a good idea then if I'm shopping for a vehicle to shop around for rates.
Absolutely.
I can do that as much as I want, right? I mean, there's just a few places I'm going to go.
Right.
What's your recommendation for something like that? Because really the big purchases that we make, that most people make, home, equity loan, car, right?
Yep.
Those are the three big loans. As you approach, let's just talk about the car. What's kind of the best way to approach that, you think, in your opinion?
Well, the first thing I would do is I would go to your local credit union. I'm a credit union advocate, so give them a shot. Go check out, see what they've got. They're probably going to be very competitive. The next place I would go would be the dealer financing.
Really?
Yeah, the dealers are able to do some insane financing. Now, they are known to do some bait and switch. So a lot of times they'll say, you know, Sunday, yes. 0% financing, right, and all this razzle dazzle. And then you'll get in there and they'll say, oh, well, you don't qualify for 0%. Here's the 6% rate. That happens all the time because that 0% rate, what's in the fine print is you have to be A+ credit with 20% down. But give them a shot. Check it out. Sometimes they're able to do some amazing things just because they're trying to move cars. And hey, why not take advantage of some cheap financing?
When you say dealer, is that okay? So if I go to Honda to buy a car, you're talking about Honda Finance,
Honda Finance, or Toyota Finance.
If they're going through some of the local banks,
right? Okay. Yeah. So if you're over at Bob's Auto Mart and Bob's going to finance it, I probably would be a little leery about Bob financing
okay.
it. But if you can go through Honda Finance or Nissan or one of those, you know, the GMAC, the huge, well, GMAC isn't around anymore, Ally, huge ones, they're going to have some pretty smoking deals.
And then, so last resort would be to check with your local financial institution, bank.
Yeah, I would check with the local bank.
Yeah. And
last place is the big bank.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So some different things. Is that similar on a mortgage? I mean, now, of course, you know, there's no Honda financing for your mortgage.
Right.
But if I'm buying a house, I know sometimes my realtor has secured or has created a relationship with a banker of some sort. What's your recommendations approaching a mortgage from that standpoint?
Home mortgage is a little bit different. That is one scenario where I would always go to a referral. So if you've got family members or, you know, a neighbor or somebody at the church that you know and trust, and they make a recommendation on someone, I would follow that lead first. You know, maybe it's at your credit union, maybe it's at the local bank. But mortgages are kind of an area where you really do need some expertise. It's not just filling out paperwork. It really is planning. And so I always look for referrals in that type of scenario.
Okay. So I go into the institution. My credit score isn't so great. I get this higher rate. Any chance that they'll let me negotiate that rate down in your experience? Do I have that option as well, or is it pretty much set in stone?
You know, it really depends on the financial institution. At a lot of the formal financial places like credit union or bank, we have it pretty much set in stone in our policies and our guidelines, how much we can move or if we can move at all. And those policies, obviously, they don't just change from borrower to borrower. So there might be a little leeway. It never hurts to ask. But don't be offended if they say, no, it's in our policy, we can't move, because that might be a very accurate answer.
Okay. And if I'm a consumer and I sit down and I'm figuring out my budget and I add up my total debt, right? And how much of that, what's a safe debt to income ratio? That used to be a big thing in lending too, right?
Yeah.
What's your debt to income ratio? We don't talk about that so much anymore. And I think the loose lending of the late 90s and the early part of 2000 through 2008.
Yeah.
Right. Things were pretty loose. But from your experience, what's, you can't say zero, but what's a safe debt-to-income ratio?
Well, the Certified Financial Planning Board would give us some guidance here. And the CFP board says that you never want to spend more than 28% of your gross income on your housing expenses. So that would include home, principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. And then you would never want to spend more than 36% of your gross income total on all debt payment. So that would include, that 36% would include, like I said, your principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, but then also your car payment, your credit card payments, and any other installment loans you might have out there. So that's kind of the rule of thumb. And let me tell you guys, if you're above 36% debt to income of gross, you probably know it. It's going to be pretty tight. It's going to be pretty, there's not going to be a lot of breathing room there.
Yeah, that's a tough place to be. A good idea to sit down with a quick budget. What are you paying? What part of those are debt? What am I making? Divide one into the other, and you'll get some idea of what your debt-to-income ratio is. And then, you know, sounds like 28% or less, and you probably want to be closer to 20. I mean, what do you recommend for someone?
Yeah, you know, when we're talking about buying a home, I'm a big fan of the 15-year mortgage if you can do it. And so if you're doing a 15-year mortgage, being right around that 28% is probably okay. If you're on a 30-year mortgage, you know, then it's probably makes it be pretty wise to be under 25%.
Okay. So some good numbers to work on. Andrew, this podcast always goes so fast.
Yeah, it does.
And I know, it just flies by. Any other advice for folks when we're talking about credit scores? Anything we missed in there that would help people kind of deal with their credit scores? And any last words?
Yeah, the last and most important thing probably is anytime you apply for credit, Jim, you are required and you're eligible by law to have a copy of the report that the lender used in making the decision to approve or deny.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, so always get a copy of that and maybe even ask the personal banker, you know, hey, can you explain to me what's on this report? Because it's relatively easy to read, but it's your right. You're entitled to see it, and I would always suggest you to do it.
And if I do have some discrepancy on my credit report, what's the best way to handle those discrepancies?
Go straight to the source. Go to that site again, annualcreditreport.com, and it's got an area where you can resolve some of those discrepancies.
Have you actually had that work for anybody that you know?
Oh yeah.
Okay, really. So that is a process that works. I've always been a little skeptical of those. Seems like those things get tied up in some government hole somewhere.
Yeah.
And never come back out?
We don't have time today, but there are some consumer protection laws out there about how long they can ignore you for before it has to be just expunged from your record.
Good stuff. Well, we've come to the end of the podcast. Let folks know they can podcast or they can email the show, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. We love your comments, your questions, your suggestions. If you have a particular topic that you'd like us to cover from a financial standpoint, we'd love to hear from you. Send those emails in. I always get those over to Andrew, and we chat a little bit each week before we do the show. For now, we're still on a two-week schedule, so if you've been wondering where we were at after the podcast we did 2 weeks ago, we're going to do it 2 weeks for a while. If that's too short, let us know. If 30 minutes is too short, let us know. Just any comments that you have would be appreciated. Andrew, thanks again for taking some time to come out and talk about that.
Thanks for letting me talk.
And have a good afternoon.
See ya.